Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:02 p.m. the Pacific Summer Time. Today is August 25th. I thought we'd kick off with Tesla because it had the downside key yesterday, but it didn't close on the low, and then it was up today, so it hasn't had any follow-through. Now, we've had other downside keys previously. Certainly, there was one. Obviously, a big downward dynamic at the beginning of July did really nothing. There was a downside key on the 23rd of July. It really only pulled back for a day, and then it just went sideways for a while. This really does look more like symptomatic of a range in the region of a big round number. And we've got plenty of those. So this is still very much a clear mania. I think the most important thing about Tesla is that it's a lightning rod for speculative interest when interest rates are low. But we've certainly seen a huge amount of money surge into the stock over the course of the last few months. I mean, really, not that long ago, it was trading at $500, and now it's at $2,000. So it's been a spectacular advance. And obviously, there is risk here, because if it were to pull back in the same manner that it has done on previous occasions, it could easily shave $1,000 off the price and still be in the region of the trend mean. So there's obviously risk here with some of these shares. Advanced Micro Devices would probably be another good example where it's had a really quite spectacular advance. And it was in positive territory again in here today. So we've had three or four really good weeks on the upside. It paused for most of August, and then it was in additional positive territory in here today. When we think about the semiconductors index as a whole, then it also continues to extend this breakout. So, I mean, this has been an extraordinary advance, but it follows the completion of a very lengthy base formation all the way back in 2014. So if we can think about it in terms of the psychological perception stages of the bull market, well, we had disbelief between 2001 and approximately 2013. Then we had a two-year first step above the base. And then things started to really pick up in 2016. So we're about 4 years into a bull market. Now, there has obviously been a very significant advance away from that first step above the base. And then we had this major consolidation in 2018. It then broke out in 2019. Then we've had a much bigger pullback. It's also worth considering that when we look at these long-term charts, it's the 1,000-day moving average is the biggest arbiter of whether we're in a bull market or a bear market. And it bounced from the 1,000-day moving average in March of this year. It has accelerated away from that level. And really, a sustained move below the 200-day moving average would be required to even begin to question that this is still a bull market environment. Semiconductors are clearly benefiting from the stay-at-home trend, but also the conclusion that we are now in a new paradigm, that there are simply going to be more people working remotely, that there is going to be less demand for office space, more demand for desk space, so that people will want to own bigger homes. They might be remote from bigger cities, that they'll want areas clearly devoted to where they can go for work or study. And potentially right now, for example, in my home, we need four separate workspaces because both myself and Mrs. Tracy work from home, and now both of our daughters are being educated from home. So this has represented a bit of a kerfuffle around the house in the last few days as we prepare for school. But it's also resulted in MacBooks being ordered by my daughter's high school, Chromebooks being ordered by my other daughter's middle school, and this is a condition that is going on everywhere. What we can also see is the legitimization of the customer relationship management software, I think, sector, as now forming part of just about all service businesses. So, Salesforce has now been inducted into the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Well, it's hard to really describe it as an industrial company, but it is definitely a business-to-business company, and it has done nothing but rise for most of the last 12 years, and it continues to do well. Well, if we then think about the other companies that are being slotted into the Dow Jones Industrials, it's, I think, a picture of where the economy is going. So Honeywell at least is an industrial company. But one thing that we also saw last week is that Honeywell is in the process of developing its own quantum computer. So they are at the forefront of what is likely still a very clear and emerging investment trend. Then what we've also seen is that Amgen has been added to the Dow Jones Industrials, and it has resulted in Pfizer being removed. So we now see that there is a clear biotechnology company is replacing a pharmaceuticals company. And this is also reflective of the changes that are happening in the healthcare sector, because we're moving progressively more towards cures rather than treatments. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that Amgen is at the forefront of that. And Pfizer has obviously also benefited recently from its investments in the vaccine sector. But one is trending upwards. The other one is struggling to break a downtrend. Then, obviously, there are two other companies that have been excised from the Dow to make room for the new entries, and Exxon is a big one. And now the big question is it going to be able to sustain its dividend? Well, at the moment it is wedded to trying to sustain the dividend, but it's not doing it out of new cash flow that's coming in, and it is coming right down now to test this $40 area. The dividend yield right now is an outsized 8.5%, which is way above where most other companies are paying. The big question, therefore, is what are we likely to see in terms of the oil price? Well, the oil price popped on the upside in here today. So the negativity that's being expressed towards oil companies, and obviously Exxon is vertically integrated, so it is exposed to the oil sector in every portion of its business, but at least oil prices are starting to push up and out of this range that's been forming for the last month. If we see upside follow through tomorrow, well, then we're going to be back above the trend mean. There is, of course, the potential that this is reasonably short term in nature, and because of the dual storms that are now about to hit the Texas area and the Louisiana border, where there is a great deal of refining capacity concentrated. Gasoline prices popped on the upside yesterday, and this does look like a clear, I think, response to the threat to supply from a storm. Then when we think about the outlook for natural gas, it's a key component of the national grid in a number of countries. It's also key to the aspirations of the green movement, because it's the cleanest potential alternative that's readily realizable for the intermittency of the green alternatives. But then, of course, we have the potential that because prices are so low, particularly relative to other energy commodities, that it is going to represent a growth in the hydrogen sector, because the just simple economics 101, when the price of a vital commodity is low, it creates additional demand. And that demand needn't necessarily be from areas where we have been accustomed to seeing demand coming from. Now, I did post an interesting article in here today talking about a diamond battery, but it should really be called a nuclear battery. Some people are already reticent to own electric vehicles because of the potential for uncontrollable fires. Now, statistically, just based upon the number of miles driven, there are fewer fires from electric vehicles than internal combustion engines. However, a lithium fire can't be put out, and it has to just burn out on its own. So then you're presented with an unknown, and I think that is something that just does not get a lot of discussion in here. Well, talking about putting a nuclear battery in a car is obviously going to come up with more resistance, even if it can follow through on the promise that it might never need to be charged. These are incredible promises. They have the potential to completely upend the entire global economy. The promise of reprocessing nuclear fuel has been around for about 70 years. It's never been realizable because it's too expensive. Well, if this company has in fact been able to crack that nugget, if they've been able to come up with a way to get around the regulations to in fact produce batteries that are safe and can be deployed at data centers or in satellites or new space technology or in power plants around the world as mobile batteries, well, then it's obviously something that could act as backup power, as primary power. The prospect of having a phone that would never need to be charged for its entire life cycle and then could be recycled is to be used in another life cycle is just incredibly promising. It's also the kind of promise that tends to come up in the latter stages of bull markets. You know, when we have had an incredible advance where people really start to get visionary about the future. You know, it really is about, in the words of Bill Clinton, it's the vision thing. That you really do need to come up with something that can truly propel the imagination way out into the future, so that that's going to encourage more and more people in off the sidelines to invest. And then we also had the news in here today of a Korean firm that has redeveloped a value definition so that dyed-in-the-wool value investors can buy shares like Amazon, which, based upon intangible assets, are undervalued. Well, there's obviously a lot of people agree because the share price continues to accelerate. And it was at a new closing high in here today. Now, Amazon has been the buy-the-dip share for this entire bull market. And that has worked on absolutely every occasion. So until it stops working, then investors are going to continue to pour money into the share. And the price looked rich at 400. Well, it's climbing in at 4,000. So the share is up 10 times in 6 years, which is really quite an incredible feat. Of course, eventually Amazon will run out of runway. Eventually, there is a limit to how big a company can grow in terms of its revenue. But when we are in an environment where the central banks of the world are printing money and like it is going out of fashion, then the price at which any share can trade has really no limit. And I think that is by far the biggest point right now. Because when we think about the total assets of central banks, we're up to 27.2 trillion, and this is a just phenomenal increase in the supply of money coming into the market. The S&P 500 was at another new high in here today. We continue to see that there is a clear rotation now underway into recovery candidates, and that is really I think an important ingredient when we have got companies like Starbucks or L Brands doing well, then that is certainly helping to, I think, really enhance confidence that we are in a new bull market environment. Then when we think about the transportation index, it had been underperforming, but it was up and where it briefly hit another new recovery high in here today. This continues to look rather encouraging, considering that it had been underperforming for such a long time, but it has also had a V-shaped recovery. So that is, I think, supportive of the view that economic recovery is what the stock market anticipates. Bond yields are rising. They are rising slowly, and the 10-year was up 3 basis points in here today. When we think about the yield curve, well, the Fed has been saying that they're not engaged in yield curve control, but when we think about the pattern of the yield curve spread, it's been pausing below 70 basis points on at least 2 occasions. Now, the spread is widening once more, so it's likely to go back up and test that 70 basis point level. Then we'll see what happens in terms of the Fed's willingness to continue to support or to buy in longer dated bonds to try and depress yields. The dollar was a little weaker in here today, so it has not yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs. It most particularly has not been able to sustain a move above 94. The gold price continues to hold the $1,900 area. This is really the best of all possible worlds, that the size of the pullback has been limited to about 10%. It's, in fact, smaller than the reaction we saw in March. It's also holding the region of the previous peak, which was around $1,911. This is really quite impressive in terms of the ability of gold to hold on to these gains. If it can in fact continue to do that, then we're certainly the conviction of the bulls will not be questioned in any real way. I do think though that if just history is any guide, that sometimes when we see these ranges that are very tight, it's usually towards the end of the consolidation that volatility briefly picks up. It shakes out the weak holders, and then value investors step in and the price takes off again. So I wouldn't be inclined to just call the all clear just yet, but so far the action is really quite encouraging. And then when we think about gold shares, the reaction has been limited to a very similar sized pullback to what we saw in May and June. It was well off its high, off the lows in here today. So far, this is a staircase sequence uptrend. It's coming off, coming out of a rather lengthy base formation. And I think the most important point is this is the point in the cycle when gold shares should do well. They're not investing in a lot of new supply. The vast majority of cash flow is going to increase dividends. They are not investing that free cash flow in increasing supply or taking on more risk, so that's a positive. And then we have some of the streamers which were able to buy back inside the base and on attractive terms. They are really benefiting right now. We are also in the, because silver has broken out, we are in the second psychological perception stage of the bull market, which is acceptance. So that's also, I think, that's been a very clear breakout. There's no question in that. The price continues to hold the $25 area, which is, again, really quite positive. What this is also potentially starting to do is to throw some focus onto the higher cost producers, because when prices start to rally, then they get the bigger bounce in terms of their profitability, because they're highly dependent on higher prices. So what I think is interesting about the junior gold miners is that it has so far been able to hold the upper side of the base, and it still has room in which to consolidate and still hold the breakout. So junior gold miners are just beginning to get into the party here. Elsewhere in stock markets, it was a quiet day. The majority of stock markets were in mildly negative territory, but not in a real dynamic fashion. The Nikkei had gapped on the upside in the early session, wasn't quite able to hold all of the gain. But I think the big question here now is, as it comes back up towards the upper side of this more than 2-year range, will it be able to break on the upside? We have to look at really a lot of back history to really get some, I think, perspective on the fact that this entire range is a first step above the base. And I think that is something that does tend to get left on the sideline, that Japan has been underperforming for a profound amount of time, and it has really only just been able to break above 20,000. And as long as it is holding that 20,000 level, well, then we have to conclude that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And the fact that Taiwan has been able to hold on to the break above the 12,000 level and has rebounded over the last 3 days, when it certainly took a hit from Taiwan Semiconductor pulling back, but then it has also rebounded. So Taiwan Semiconductor is beginning to get some attention again, and not least because the semiconductors index generally is doing better. I still think that 2021 is likely to be a big year for infrastructure, industrial resources, where I think the most important thing, rather than looking at them intraday, is to think that, or to clearly identify that they have broken the downtrend. Copper prices continue to pause around this $3 level, but so far it is holding the break up and out of this range that formed between July and the middle of August. If that's the limit of the consolidation we get around $3 again, it will be really quite beneficial. So we certainly have the potential for yields to rise. That's certainly something that has the potential to take some of the momentum out of the big advances that we've seen in the large cap technology sector. But with higher yields, there is the potential that the Fed and other central banks are going to have to move further towards yield curve control and start to buy those bonds, because governments simply cannot afford to pay higher prices for their debt at this level. And I think that is part of the reason why we still have strength in stock markets. Investors are predicting that there will be additional assistance coming through. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.